Hiya, it's the theme talk. I'm Josh Sexton. Jurgen Klopp has just held his pre-Wolverhampton Wanderers press conference, and joining me from Norway to react to that are Neil Atkinson, John Gibbons and Craig Cannon. A huge weekend, John, and this is quite a nice way to start it personally for us.
Yeah, it was something that we talked about a couple of months ago. We were here with the lads from Boss Night, and they're doing a big event in Oslo and sold it out a couple of years ago. I think it's been sort of pushed back, but asked if we'd like to get involved. We were like, yeah, that sounds great. And then I think we all, especially Neil, forgot. And then suddenly last week, we're like, we're going to Oslo on fire, you know, on top of everything else. Did you say that's fair, Neil?
That's very fair. I think one of the things that happened was I was actually unbelievably efficient with the paperwork. So no one had to chase me for 3 weeks to get me to send some details. I just did it straight away. So no one had spoken to me about it for absolutely ages. So then I was like, oh, yeah, that. So yeah, here we find ourselves in Norway. Delighted, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
We came to Oslo a few years back and it was great. And we've been recognising places, although it's obviously a completely different time of year, which doesn't obviously gives it a very different look. But very, very pleased to be in Oslo for what is shaping up to be a really mad weekend. Oslo tonight, Manford Hall tomorrow, and then a big, big, big Sunday with the Reds, which is Jurgen Klopp's concern. Did someone ask him about Oslo? What about Boss Night tonight, hey, Jurgen? It's going to be a bell to get down.
Have you got your ticket for Manford Hall? I heard there's not many left.
I think Jurgen's banging on the door, he said. We're currently sat in a hotel lobby bar. Yeah, very scarce of him. We're currently sat in a hotel lobby bar in Oslo, as we've said there. So if it sounds slightly atmospheric, then apologies for that. I mean, Andy and might well make it sound great, and then you won't know what I'm talking about. But Craig Hannon, I'll come to you first, because the big man has confirmed that the other big man is leaving, Divock Origi. I'll read the quote out.
Because Hannon was awesome.
It's lovely. No, he's never leaving. Klopp said, "I expect Div to get a special reception, one of the most important players I ever had. He is a pure joy to work with. It's not over yet, I think I was meant to say Paul Gorse there. But he deserves all good thoughts we can generate for his future. He'll be a success, outstanding. I remember so many things when I think about Div. Goals, ups and downs, a Liverpool legend." I think Jurgen sums up perfectly though.
Yeah, I love the line about him being one of the most important players, because he's been so important in moments and big matches, and that sort of sums Divock up really. And I felt so sad. Look, we've all known it's been coming. Like, he doesn't play much at the moment. We've known that he's gonna finish the season. He's gonna leave. We've known about AC Milan for about what's felt like 6 months. But when I saw it finally confirmed, I had like proper sadness, because you feel like it just feels like a bit of an end of an era. And the goal he scores against Everton is one of my favourite goals of the season, because I felt like I was celebrating potentially for the last time with Divock, and I loved how he got that moment, and that it was against Everton, and that makes it so Divock Origi. And look, there may well, in the next two games, there may well be something. I really hope he brings him on at the weekend. I hope that he gets his moment to come on the pitch, possibly does something for us on the pitch, something big on the pitch. But if not, you'll get a big, big reception, and we get to clap him away in the way that we didn't get to really for Gini Wijnaldum last year.
And Craig mentions about the moments there, Neil, and he's been such a moments footballer for Liverpool, hasn't he? But I guess that sort of understates his ability. You know, we had Pep Linders earlier in the season talking about him being one of the best finishers in world football, and that's what he has been. It's nice to hear Klopp talk about him being such an important footballer for him, because he just has been for us. He's been amazing.
I think the way Klopp speaks about him is fascinating, because there's lots of ways in which he's theoretically just a bit part footballer, but that's not what Jurgen Klopp sees. Jurgen Klopp doesn't view him in any way, shape or form as a bit part footballer. He sees him as someone who's integral and who'll come through for us at certain points. How Jurgen sees all the football, I think, around this stuff is really interesting. I think he's really open to the idea of there's graft that needs to be done, but then there might be some sort of fabulous moment that someone blessed almost will get to grab, and that's the way in which he's, and blessed with ability, I hasten to add, gets to grab, and that's sort of the way in which he's seen Divock all the way through. I think it's just really, you know, he's obviously been present for so many times. But, you know, if you were to then go through and sort of, you know, if someone wanted to be a snide and none of the journalists would, they could go back to Jurgen and say, but he's only played this many minutes for you across the last four seasons, like literally just the number of minutes. And to which Jurgen would go, yeah, but you count the number of moments. And I've backed him to find the moments. And I think that's the, you know, it goes back to that goal against Everton. I mean, there's lots of excellent performances actually before the goal against Everton, the one in 2018. But in that one, when he brings him off the bench, if we're all honest about it, not one of us thought this is what's going to absolutely change it, or certainly you'll do some work for us, some graphs, stretch them, run some channels, but it was as this sort of run of these huge moments come, and that's the way Jurgen sees football. You work and work and work, and then if you're lucky, there'll be potentially big moments in it for you, and then there's big moments in it for your team, and you get those big moments all together, and just one of them is special. But when you get them and they build and build, they become even more special. And to me, that's the most interesting part of all of this. And he's gone out of his way, the manager, to praise him today. There'll be other footballers leaving in the summer, and the manager's probably already got a sense of who they are. He'll speak warmly about all of them, but everything, and you'll feel it as well, because I don't think there's anything he doesn't feel warmly about. But everything he feels, I think, about Origi, you know, he said today, and he's absolutely sincere in it, and the way in which they all respect his talent is, I think, also absolutely sincere. I think we're going to miss him in a really weird way, in that he's exactly the sort of footballer who in 18 months time you might hear me on an Anfield Rap Gutter show saying something like, well, what we could do with is a lad who's hugely mobile, who pops up to get a good goal here and there, who can put himself about, and is about 6'4". If we could get one of them, that'd be amazing. And ultimately, all football teams, and this is the way I see football, the way I see life, all football teams are suited to have the option of bring a big man on at some point in proceedings. It always helps to have a big man in your back pocket, and Divock Origi's been an incredible big man.
We will miss him, John, won't we? It's obviously sad when any player leaves under this Jurgen Klopp regime. You know, Craig mentioned Gini Wijnaldum before, we've had Daniel Sturridge, Dejan Lovren all sort of leaving, and there's all been sort of moments of sadness tied to those, but it feels like even more with Divock, because those moments were shared with him, because I suppose there are the downs that Jurgen Klopp mentions there, probably more so than any of those players can sort of attest to it with Divock Origi. Like, he's been out on loan, he's had a bit of a torrid time out on loan and that kind of thing, but then he comes back to Liverpool and he's a legend here.
Yeah, it is, as you say, interesting that Jurgen talks about the highs and lows. He's conscious of it. There'll be lows that we know about. You know, you mentioned, you know, one particularly low loan spell, which is, you know, a bit of a disaster really. He ends up in worst team of the season, doesn't he, in a national newspaper. I mean, you have to take these things with a pinch of salt. I wasn't watching him every week, but, you know, I mean, he wasn't sort of banging them in really. There's obviously even lows when he's playing well. So the injury against Everton, the Funes Mori tackle, that really knocks him out of his stride and effectively ends the season for him, or he does sort of patch himself up and hobble on for that Europa League final. But there'll be other lows, as I say, that we don't necessarily know about, which will be long periods where, you know, where he's out the team, where he's maybe saying to Jurgen, you know, what could be doing more, and Jurgen's probably saying, well, not much really, do you know what I mean? I'm going with these lads at the moment. There was times where, you know, we were relying on him for starts a little bit more, and he just looked a little bit out of kilter with everything else, and it was a real problem at one point that the Diogo Jota solved, which was when one of the front three drop out and Divock comes in. There's not just a drop in quality, but the other two lads don't look as good either. And so, you know, stuff like that, you know, is I guess what Jurgen's sort of referring to along with the sort of more high profile things. So he's had a funny Liverpool career in many ways, but an absolutely spectacular one. And yeah, and called him a Liverpool legend, and that's what we should all refer to him as, because if he scored as many big goals as he has, if he's crucial to his Liverpool success and trophies as he's been, he's of course a Liverpool legend.
He's a Liverpool legend. I think the idea of, you know, this is where it comes back to, the idea of you need to throw someone on to dig you out to get something. Well, to be fair to Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, since 2017-18, we haven't really needed much of that. There's been games where, you know, individual games where the game sort of got away from us a little bit, but even 17-18, where, you know, we don't put an unbelievable points haul in, you know, we qualify for the Champions League, we make the final, but even in that season, goals weren't the problem. It was what was happening at the back that was a little bit more of the problem. You know, Mo Salah scores 44. Goals are not the issue here. And I think quite consistently, you know, this is back to this idea of, because the three, as it was, and as John says, and then you add Jota to that, and now you add Diaz to that, because they've been so good and so consistently that good, games tend to be pretty much polished off. So the idea of, well, what you need, it's interesting to me to actually just think about for a second how those key moments come about in certain periods of the season when it's intense, December being an example. Also in the point at which it's all crunch time, everyone's played a lot of games at that sort of stage, and suddenly there's room for someone who's just a little bit different. And I think I think there's every chance he's got a role to play in the big one coming up. I think there's every chance, you know, with five subs in there, that at some point the rationale becomes, all right, we could do with a little bit of Divock Origi in all sorts of senses. You can be 2-0 up and think that, and you can also be chasing a game and think that, and hopefully we're not chasing a game. But I think that's the measure of him, and that's where he's been. And then there's other little moments of, you know, he was right in front of us at Preston when he backheel volleyed it into the net from 8 yards out, and you know, you stop to sort of think about that and how many footballers would even try it. And you know, he's terrific earlier in the season against AC Milan. You know, there's all sorts of little moments where, you know, things could have been different, you know, genuinely. I by different, what I mean is he gets more games, but I don't think it could have been different in terms of he gets more big goals. That's the strangeness, and that's the sort of the conflict of this. I think, you know, we could have, if we hadn't been so brilliant in recruitment through this period, you could have had more Divock, but I don't think that would have led to more big moments with Divock Origi involved. It might have just led to more big Divock Origi goals.
You've talked about big moments. It's the fact that they're the biggest moments. Like, they aren't just big moments. There's a European Cup final there. There's the two goals against Barcelona. But even this season, if you think about the Wolves game, if we end up by, you know, potentially winning the league this weekend,
well, we'd be out of it right now.
We'll look back on that game as, well, that becomes the Aston Villa of 2020 because of the way Divock Origi scores right at the end, and suddenly that becomes a massive moment in Divock Origi's career that maybe isn't that yet, but could be on.
And he was great,
you know,
when he came on. By the way, he's really good.
So he's you know, even and look, we've done all of this and not mentioned the fact that he leaves having you know, done the scholarship at the uni every year, which just tells you that he wants to leave a lasting impression on the city, not just by his football.
Yeah, absolutely. So many Divock Origi moments to celebrate, hopefully a couple more as well, John, but there's been enough for us to celebrate this season, I think it's fair to say. And Jurgen Klopp was asked about the parade in his press conference, and he says, similar to me there, he says, we have so many reasons to celebrate. I think it's enough to celebrate life. Of course, Carabao Cup, FA Cup. I know we didn't have the parade 2 years ago, so I'm happy we can deliver what I promised that time. Obviously a bit of a nod to his song there, delivering what he said. He said, it's about us, we want to celebrate, we couldn't care less what others say. It's just for us, it's just for Liverpool FC, it's just to celebrate that we are together in this moment of time. That's enough to celebrate, but this May 29 will be a great day, and we're hoping there's going to be more reasons to celebrate, of course, during the parade. But I think it's good, isn't it, that Liverpool have come out and said, we're going to celebrate everything that's happened so far, and also that Jurgen said, you know, we're going to celebrate what happened 2 years ago, which we didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, I think it's there's a couple of really nice lines in there. I love his idea of, well, we're celebrating life, and, you know, I think
being together.
Yeah, exactly.
What we get to do.
Exactly, and the idea of, you know, you said to Jürgen had this way, we do a parade every season. Do you know what I mean? And just do it and just go, yeah, we're gonna do it because it's a laugh. Basically,
he's a good lad.
Yeah, and use the sound, and people come up and they're great, and I bet you spend loads of money in the hotels, and that's boss. Do you know what I mean? Like, he just thinks parades are a generally good thing. So, and he's right. They're brilliant, but there is. Absolutely loads to celebrate. You know, there is the two trophies, hopefully more. There's a potential of a third, and indeed a fourth. The women's team obviously getting to celebrate, which is a fantastic thing. It was great that they got them on the pitch a week or so ago and got a great ovation from the people who went gone for the pint, like me, if I'm honest. But I think this is obviously another level, isn't it? So this is going to be a fantastic moment for them. But like you say, just 2 years ago we didn't get this, and so I'm sure there'll be, you know, some applause sort of saved for that, really. It's not just nice one for what you've done this season. It's nice one for what you've done the last couple of years. Even last year, do you know what I mean? When it didn't necessarily go, you know, how we hoped. You know, a nice one for carrying on and be getting out there. And I'm sure footy was shit. But it was for a while, fucking all we had to look forward to, wasn't it? Those hot mics in the empty lobby, do you know what I mean? And getting together and me bringing the mad beer from by ours.
In the milk cartons,
yeah.
There.
And just you know, enjoying, you know, a bit of, I don't know, sort of normality was the sort of good as it got, really. So nice one for that. Obviously nice one for Alisson Becker for fucking that header and all that, and getting us back in the Champions League, and, you know, all this. And then you go back and the league title, that, you know, we got to celebrate sort of, but not necessarily how we wanted to. And so there is so much to celebrate, and it's going to be an emotional day, I think, whatever happens. I mean, obviously, you know, there's going to be a few tired boys and girls from exertions back to Paris. You know, we're travelling overnight to come back to be here for it. Loads of other people will be the same, you know, early flights. There'll be other people, you know, coming up and down from around the country. So, and I haven't seen, you know, whatever happens the night before, you know, win or lose, people are going to be, you know, emotions are going to be high, and tears are going to be close to the eyeballs. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm nearly crying now, to be honest with you.
He says, you know, the idea of celebrating life, and that's, I mean, first and foremost, that's sort of a measure of Jurgen to an extent. But I think there's a really key thing here where Jürgen, whether he knows it or not, is buying into a key civic Liverpool tendency, which is that we love to create a bank holiday. We absolutely love to make a bank holiday up at the drop of a hat. The Friday of Aintree, bank holiday, obviously. Mother's Day, bank holiday. Yeah. We love to create a bank holiday at the drop of a hat, and that's what this sort of is in a way. But I think the idea of, I think it's a lovely way to phrase it, because it has been something that's been collective, and the fact that he's making the point, ignore, he's basically saying whatever happens, take no notice of them, and he's saying that in the context of, because there's a whilst that goes on, it's worth saying, you know, the night before we play the European Cup final. So it's, what he's saying in advance is, if we get beat, and we're not trying to get beat, we don't think we're going to get beat, but take no notice of them, whoever them is in this area, take no notice of them. And he's good at that, Jürgen, and we could all heed that a little bit more. Yeah. I think take no notice of them, whoever them may be, from a case by case basis, and it might prove to be important on that Sunday. It might just, and I put the just in inverted commas, be a season where Liverpool have won two trophies, gone to the Champions League final and broken 90 points. That's what it might be. It might just be that. And then people will say, well, why would you have a parade for that? And it'll be really important that the thing to do isn't to rise to that, isn't to engage with that. It is to take no notice of it. Just absolutely shun it.
And it's to show them we do not give a fuck. And that's a very Liverpool thing, isn't it? We do not care what the rest of the country think. And the guy think we win the European Cup, and I've got a little feeling. I keep saying I've got a little feeling about Sunday, but I don't want to talk about it in case he thinks it. But
you're on a podcast, mate, where someone's going to ask you in a minute.
But I will be emotional at the parade. I've never been to one before, but I'll be emotional because I'll be clapping them, not just because of, you know, what they've won or potentially end up winning, but I'll be clapping them for what John said, getting us through that. I'll be clapping them for the relentlessness, and I'll be clapping them for the experiences that they've given us yet again this season.
Just some advance parade notice, you've never been to one before, you're going to be physically and mentally exhausted, and also plan to walk home.
So I will cry.
It is because there'll be no cabs. You can't get a cab for love and fucking money anyway.
The bars
these days in this city, the bars are very open.
Don't worry about that then.
The bars are very open. The public transport, the queues are enormous. It's hard to put into words. But this is the other reason why it sounds really boring. This is the other reason why it is important that they have actually confirmed that they're doing this now. As much as people, again, there's loads of other bits and pieces, but it is a huge logistical exercise. It really is. And as John said before, the other thing is, it's not two trophies, it's three. It's what Liverpool women have done, and the fact that the club have gone out of the way to include that, what that'll mean for those women when they get on that bus, whatever happens to them next, when they get promoted to the WSL, some will go, some won't, but what that'll mean to them, just to get to sort of see the city come out. But also, I love a parade, and I've grown to love a parade more and more because I've thought about this by virtue of the fact that thinking about football a lot and how people interact with it is my job. And one of the things of my thoughts that have come out from there is, there's something hugely democratic about a parade. All you need is a bit of pavement.
Yeah.
So at the minute, John's up nights sorting tickets out around all sorts of games on a regular basis because there's a finite number of tickets, but anyone can go to a parade. And when you see a parade, it's full of people who you don't see the type of at matches. It's full of families, it's full of people of colour, people come from all over the country to come and be part of it, people come from abroad to come and be part of it. And those people can never, ever, ever all be present at a Liverpool match. There's no structure big enough, no matter what they do with the ground, and they should always try make the ground bigger, don't get me wrong. A parade is hugely democratic, and including Liverpool women, there will be, you know, and role models matter, especially in women's sport.
Yeah.
There will be young girls watching a city applaud a bus full of women who've achieved this remarkable thing for Liverpool. And those young girls will on Monday be saying, can I play some football? Can I be part of that? Can that be my life? And that Liverpool have done that, it really matters, and it matters on such a core level. It's hard to actually understand. When you're a boy, you're not short of sport and role models. You can, and opportunities as well. Yeah, you can be really cocky about it and go, well, it doesn't matter, this sort of thing. It does. It really does. And so the show that the city of Liverpool is going to put on, and Liverpool Football Club are going to put on with them, is something that is genuinely inspirational. But it should also be seen in the way Mitch Jürgen's framing it as well, which is that it's inspirational for the city. Full stop. It's great for the city. I for one can't wait. I'm made up a rush and back for it. I know I'll be shattered. I know I'll have a cry at some point. I know I might have another breakdown, like I did walking out past the old National Express coach station, but I couldn't get a cab after the 2019 one, and I just thought, why the fuck is this my life right now? All of that will happen. Keep your eyes peeled. But it is a really special day, and it's a special day for the city and for so many people in the city who we do not get to include in football on a regular basis, and those people matter as much as we do.
I think that's so important, John, isn't it? Because it's a celebration of the unity. You know, you were joking there about, I think Jurgen would do a parade every season, even if there weren't trophies, and there is something in that, because Jurgen wants to celebrate all those things that Neil said there. You know, the club wants to celebrate the women's team as much as they want to celebrate the men's team. They want us all to come out in our numbers and celebrate this being a time that we can be together and do this sort of thing.
And what a show of fucking power as well, do you know what I mean? Fucking Scouse power, as Kev Walsh's you know, flag says, is that, you know, there'll be the I don't know what order they'll do them in. It's normally like the press one first, isn't it? And whether it's men or the women first, it doesn't really matter, really. But if the fellas have got three cups, or even, dare we say, four cups, and then you're like, I'm the fucking women one as well, do you know what I mean? It's like, fuck, if you want to win a cup, then you better hurry up, by the way, because fucking Liverpool, the City, are winning them all, and fucking Everton won one the other night, I think, by the celebrations as well. And so, yeah, it's like a shot. Like, and then these pictures are going all around the world, and that's the fantastic thing, isn't it? You know, you speak to people who, I remember, I've got a few mates on Istanbul, and they were like, oh, we were sat in this, they had a weird and wonderful way back, and you're like, oh, we were sat in this bar in Frankfurt Airport, and the parade's on, and they were a bit gutted, and I was like, yeah, but it's cool that it's on in Frankfurt Airport, yeah, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And all around the world, these pictures will be beamed around, which will show Liverpool looking spectacular, because the waterfront is obviously stunning, and, you know, I mean, so much of the city is beautiful, but out there the images to show, you know, the city will be full, there'll be people enjoying themselves, there'll be people full of joy, and then you've got these two all-conquering football teams who are parading all these trophies and beaming smiles and so many male and female role models. It's going to be fantastic. You need to make sure I go to town this year. Last year, it starts by mine, and I sort of like stumbled up. Honestly,
you've been up all night.
No, I had. I'd effectively done 24 hours of work. In tricky conditions that I made trickier with all the alcohol. You know, it was hot. I was drinking beer instead of water.
Uncle Albert face, by the way.
And so, no, I had a bit of punishing, wonderful, exhilarating 24 hours. But, yeah, I sort of, yeah, dragged myself out of bed for the start and sort of went back to bed and slept on Monday. But this year, Craig, Hannah, you need to make sure I go to town, because I want to be part of this. But everyone's, but like you say, Neil, it's for everyone, and that includes us, obviously, because we are part of everyone, but also people who you know, who haven't been, who've never been, who wouldn't even know how you get a ticket for Liverpool, but it might fucking drive past their house, and isn't that great?
And they'll be watching the matches.
Or people from home who'll have already booked to go to Liverpool because they want to be in the city for the weekend. That's the other thing. It isn't just happening in Paris. It's happening in Liverpool, and it's happening everywhere, but people are travelling to the city, and I think that's a brilliant thing. One of my favourite things is whenever you hear local kids from Liverpool talk about their earliest memories, a lot of them are the parade in 2001 or the parade in 2005, and I think that's just like, that's such a powerful thing that they get to see that at such a young age, maybe at a time when they're maybe too young to sit through 90 minutes of a football match, but they get to see the footballers wave them as they drive by, and that's the thing, that's the overriding thing I thought about the footage that Sam got from the parade in after Madrid, was just so many young kids, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, and their dads and mum's shoulders, getting to experience this and witness this. And no, I can't wait for it all now. I think it's brilliant we're doing it, no matter what we win next. I think we'll win it all.
To really paraphrase a Dan Morgan column from the other week, Jurgen Klopp has brought the party to Liverpool, and what a party it is, what a city it is, what a man he is, and what a man Divock Origi is, of course. We'll hand you over now for the opposition view.
Rich Hobbs, Wolves fan cast, to talk about Wolverhampton Wanderers' end to the season. Is it fair to say, Rich, that when the big prize of Europa League football looked like it was off the table, Wolves have struggled to keep going with the momentum?
Yeah, we've really struggled for the business end of the season. I think for a number of reasons. I think as soon as we hit that magical 40 points, they've really struggled to keep going, and very much run out of steam the last quarter of the season.
Is there a thing where they're just gonna ultimately, like, they just want to take stock and start again next season? Is it as straightforward as that at this point? That's what it was all about all along anyway. Do you know that the issue is that that's an intercultural thing? It was, we survived through this season, there'll be a few changes, and then we work it out and go again?
Partly, I think we were kind of performing beyond expectations for a large part of the season. We've never had the biggest of squads. And I think after a couple of injuries hit us, the difficulty is, and I think Liverpool had this last year, is that all of a sudden you have players who are coming in who aren't fully match fit. So you end up being having a bigger injury crisis because you're having players who have just come back from injury coming into a size. And I think we struggled from that, particularly like Neves coming back the last couple of games. Isn't very fit, but we don't have any of the central midfielders, so he's been rushed back and doesn't look like the same player from 2 months ago.
It seems to me as though there's a little run of fixtures around mid-February where Wolves get themselves a result against Tottenham and get themselves a result against Leicester, and then there's a disappointing defeat to Arsenal, which was a big night for Arsenal. And it's just never quite righted itself. Is it as simple as those injuries then? Or do you think a couple of players were overperforming for a period of time? The goalkeeper possibly being one of them, and they just couldn't quite keep it up?
Yes. I think it is a number of things. I think we were overperforming. And Jose Sarr is a great example of that. When you look at, you know, he's had a fabulous season, but you look at the expected goals and, you know, the amount of goals Wolves potentially should have conceded mathematically, and it's sky high. Fortunately for him, a lot of the season he's been phenomenal. We seem to have struggled, I think, say this last business end of the season because of injuries. I think some of the tactics haven't quite worked and haven't quite had the right game plan. And it just seems to sort of be a little bit of a mood at the club now, which is a bit, which is more negative than I think we'd have liked. And hopefully, you know, it's just a case of this small squad has pushed themselves to the edge yet again. And we have the summer to kind of reassess and regroup, because it's not a bad team on their day. The city can compete. It's just a question of whether this core group of players can go again next season, or whether there's need to be a bit more of a revolving door of some players this off-season.
When we work through it then, looking at the side that, for instance, features up against Norwich last time out, are you expecting it to be a very similar side for this game that's coming up against Liverpool? You know, Bowley's back in at the minute, Neves and Moutinho, but the fitness might not be quite right. You know, there's a few in there, isn't there, where Gomez is playing at the heart of the defence there. There's a few in there, isn't there, where they're not first choice, or the fitness isn't quite right. So do you think he might change it, or do you think up against Liverpool he'll just get the best 11 he can on the pitch?
I think it's probably going to be nearer to Norwich. There might be a couple of games, couple of players. Like, I can see Jose Sarr coming back in after, you know, John Rudy arguably played his last game in a Wolves shirt against his former team in Norwich on Sunday. So I can understand someone like Sarr coming back in. But to be honest, I think a lot of it will stay the same. And I mean, not to sound sort of too negative, I don't think it really matters a lot of the players, because none of them are in great form. So we might see Trincao come in for, let's say, Huang up front, or maybe Silva come in. But it won't make much of a difference, because none of them have really got a lot of output at the moment, unfortunately.
On the output question, Rich, is this where the Jimenez discussion is live? Because I've got so much sympathy for him as a footballer and as a person, but it's just not worked for him this year, has it? He's not had the output, at the very least, he's had in seasons prior to having the head injury.
No, it's such a tough one to be able to separate the emotional aspect of it all, because it was such a shocking and heartbreaking injury, and to see him return at the rate he did, what was phenomenal in itself. And at the drop off from, you know, 2 years ago, it's tough to see that he doesn't seem like he's the same player. And part of it is that he is not having as many chances, but also the, you know, his number of shots has gone down. His number of, you know, his shot accuracy has gone down as well. So it's not just a case of, oh, he's not getting as many chances. He's not being efficient with the chances that he's getting either. I think there's there is a argument to be made that a move in the summer would be great for all parties, and to give him a fresh start as well, and still keep that, I was going to say, hero status at Molineux to a degree. I think he'll always be remembered as a fantastic player, but I'd be anxious if we had another season like this. I think, what has he got, 6 goals in the league or something, 7 goals maybe? It's not a huge return for your main striker in a team competing for Europe, unfortunately. But saying that, no one else in a Wolves top's got anywhere near him either in terms of goals. And as I say, I think that something needs to change in the summer, whether it's how these players are performing or getting new players in, sadly. And as I say, they've done fantastic to be in the position they're in. But it's still not great. And I think the Jimenez one's a really kind of key example.
The expectation or the noise is that this could well be Neves' last game ever for Wolves as well. What sort of team do you think he goes to, Rich?
Hopefully not one in England. Honestly, I think that'd be heartbreaking for me. He keeps getting rumoured with everybody. Barcelona being quite high up. Now, whether their finances are any different now to what they were even in January, bearing in mind we sent them a player for nothing on loan, I don't quite know. He is someone who has got the ambition and the ability to play in European football, so it's going to be interesting. Personally, he doesn't need to be going to a team who play on and off in the Europa League / Europa Conference, such as an Arsenal, for me. But actually, he needs to be going to a team competing at that next level. Whether somebody like, you know, Man City or whoever come in for him, I sort of doubt. Or, you know, if Man United are foolish enough with their money to go for 70 million. As I said, personally, I'd much rather see him not play in England, because then we'd be helping a direct rival. Considering the amount of business we seem to be trying to do with Barcelona the last 2 years, I can sort of see him going there.
Yep. Okay. Thing then, weekend game. What's your prediction for this one at the weekend?
I'm gonna have to say we're gonna lose. I don't see it any other way. I don't think I've ever kind of come on here or where I've sort of said we're gonna lose, but we just seem to have no backbone, no solidity within our team to make it. I don't think we'll make it awkward enough for Liverpool. And the fact that Liverpool need to win, I think it'll be very similar to how it was against Man City a couple of weeks ago, where we might put up a bit of a fight, but as soon as like that 60 minute comes and it's, you know, 2-1 or whatever to Liverpool, I can just see us completely folding if we need to. So I think I'll be brave and say I think we're going to lose 2-0.
Okay, thank you very much to Rich. Let's get back over to Josh.
And we're back. Thank you to Rich Hobbs there. Team selection then wise, John, he was talking about the injuries to Fabinho, Mo Salah and Van Dijk, and was probably a little bit coy on all three of them, to be honest. He said he wants to play them at the weekend. He says, I've had a chat with Mo Salah and Mo Salah wants to take probably more precautions than the other two do. Jürgen would like to play them for rhythm purposes, but he says it may be off the bench, it may be from the start there. I guess we'll start with the forward line and with the Mo Salah availability question, because if Mo Salah isn't available for this one, it obviously completely changes that. But I think in my head, if I'm picking a team for Wolves and I'm picking a team for the final, if Salah's fit, it's Salah, Mane, Diaz for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mo Salah's in a really interesting position because he really wants the golden boot. He'll probably feel like he should have had it wrapped up by now, and he's probably right. You know, if we're going to judge him by the very high standards that he's set, you know, he hasn't scored enough goals for a player of his quality over the last 2 months, so he'll be a bit frustrated, and he'll know Son's one behind, and he'll know Spurs are playing Norwich, so he'll be conscious of all this, really, so he'll want to get on the pitch. But also, Liverpool Real Madrid is the biggest game of his life. Like, absolutely, like, honestly, like, he's like, fucking, what was the African Cup of Nations final? All of a sudden, do you know what I mean? Like, people are going to ask him about it in September. He's like, oh, yeah, I did that as well.
Yeah.
But remember when I scored 2 against them pricks and we won? And so that's, so this is the biggest game of his life. So I think he'll let his, I don't know, his head rule his heart and on this, and yeah, I mean, I don't even know which way he's round on this because it's all emotive, I guess. But I think he'll know that the big one is next week, and he'll know that, you know, the idea of missing that final, you know, is not worth any individual trophy that you could win. And so I think they'll, you know, if there's any doubt, they'll all err on the side of caution, really. You know, you mentioned their rhythm. Jürgen might say to them, well, should we put you on the bench and see if we can get, you know, maybe 20 towards the end, where you're just, you know, almost sort of running around a bit and just testing your legs out and things like that, and hopefully the game will have settled down by then, and Liverpool are 2-3-0 up and all that lovely stuff. But so they might sort of do that, really. But I think, you know, there's thinking you want that golden boot, and then there's the real sharpener of the mind, which is that Real Madrid game next week, which he seems to be thinking about. He's certainly talking about constantly, and so I think if there is anything, he won't play.
I think all of this might work in Salah's favour, actually, because he's played so much football recently, or up until recently, and then you think back to what he's played in the past 2.5 weeks, is what, 30 minutes at Villa, and what, 30 in the cup final whenever he went off. So he hasn't played a lot of football recently. As long as he is obviously as fit as he can be for the European Cup final, I don't really know that he needs rhythm. Like, I understand that bringing him on for 20 at the end and maybe getting his legs freshened and all of that, but I just feel like a little bit of a rest might be the best thing for Mo Salah ahead of a European Cup final.
I think the point I would say is that if the European Cup final wasn't on the horizon, say, and he didn't quite feel right, then he might try and force the matter in terms of getting on the pitch. The point is, I think he'll end up doing whatever the medical advice is and the percentage thing is to do. It's not a nothing to lose situation. It's a hell of a lot to lose situation. He would not want to miss a Champions League final, and he certainly wouldn't want to miss one against Real Madrid. So I think that with that, what I think is, if he plays, I think he's spot on. If he starts against Wolves, I think he's about as close to spot on as you can reasonably expect a footballer to be at this stage of the season, and that will be great news. And if he doesn't start, then he's getting himself right and focused to be spot on. I think if he comes off the bench, then I think, you know, that could be game sort of situation specific. There's a really important thing here, which is that I think we're going to beat Wolves, and I think there's a chance we actually beat Wolves quite heavily, to be honest with you. I think they've been poor for a while. I did the data on them for the report, if you haven't seen, and since Christmas, since the turn of the year, they're a mess, Wolves, in terms of the underlying numbers. City put 5 past them. I'm not saying we necessarily need to do them 5, but I think there is a world where with 20 to go, someone could come on and have a bit of a run around for half an hour or 20 minutes as a bit of a warm up. But we need to allow for the fact that that might not be the case. So I think he could be on the bench, but then if he doesn't come on, it'll be because he was never right and it was going to be about getting some fitness if the game situation never entirely allows. And also, there is another flip side to this, which is I think he might be looking at a couple of quite emotional, if Liverpool are ahead in the game, we've just talked a lot about Divock, I think he might be looking at a couple of emotional substitutions. You know, for me, it doesn't take much imagination to imagine Divock and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain each getting 20 minutes, and the reason why is because it's the last 20 minutes they're ever going to play at Anfield, and that stuff matters. And the reason why it matters is because it matters to the footballers. So it's not about the footballers who are going, really, it's about the footballers who are staying, going, look at how the gaffer looks after the boys we all know are moving on. And he'll do that for me one day. We'll all get our moment like this one day when it's not quite right. So all this is up in the air in terms of how the game plays out and the game state. But if Salah starts, my main thing is, if Salah starts, he starts because he's right. He doesn't start for any other reason, as far as I'm concerned.
In midfield, John, I think he I think he will go for Fabinho. I think he'll probably do one of the diddles he's been doing in recent weeks where he splits the minutes. I could see it being a midfield of Jordan Henderson and Fabinho and Thiago, and you maybe see Keita coming on for Fabinho around sort of 60, possibly even earlier than that.
Yeah, the only thing with Keita is he doesn't play Tuesday, does he? So because he doesn't play Tuesday, you might be thinking, well, do you want to get him a start or him minutes? And that's sort of where the problem comes with the thing that Neil's talking about, which is these emotional subs, is that he's only got three. And so I think if it's your front three, which is Salah, Diaz and Mane, you'll probably want to get Jota on. And if he goes Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson, which is your midfield, he'll probably want to get Keita on. And so he's done two there, do you know what I mean? And so if you're looking at it and thinking, well, I wouldn't mind some minutes for Bobby because you might need him in the final, then suddenly your three subs have gone. So this is the annoying thing, really. Maybe they should do, because, you know, like some teams playing next season's kit in the last game of the season. Maybe we should just do next season's rules, which is five subs. Maybe they could look into that. I think if you can do one, you can do the other for me. So that's where the problems might lie. Maybe you might think, you know, on Jota, well, he's played in the Tuesday and Tuesday to sort of week Saturday isn't too bad and things like that. And obviously he gets a decent run in the final and things like that. So maybe Jota's one who he feels like he can, you know, not necessarily, you know, give minutes to for the region. I'd love to see Chamberlain. It's interesting on, he says that Divock is the only one who's going and no one else has come to him, and I think he's telling a little bit of a white lie there. I think Chamberlain's going to go, and I think it's probably just not quite sorted yet. There'll be clubs in for him, but maybe there's not been a concrete bid, or maybe there's not been a bid that they like, and so they don't want to say, well, you know, he doesn't want to say in a press conference he looks like he's going to go if that doesn't happen.
Negotiation.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it might be a little bit of negotiation, but I think also, you know, you don't want to end up looking silly, and you don't want to make a player look silly who's suddenly here in August and everyone's like, hang on, Divock said he was, sorry, Divock, he's not the manager yet. Klopp said he's leaving a couple of months ago, so I think it's all just not saying too much until it's sort of done, really. But I think, you know, I'd be surprised if we see Chamberlain next season, and I think most people would, and it looks like, you know, he is sort of going. So I think there'll be the big emotional one for Origi, and I think there'll be a nudge and a wink one for Chamberlain, and that's fine because he hasn't quite had the huge moment that Divock had, but who has? But he's still been a brilliant player for Liverpool. He's still been a big fan favourite, you know, amongst the supporters who go, you know, really like him, can see his endeavour, can see what a good footballer is, can see he puts everything in whenever he wants. I know he's been unlucky, really, and that's all, yeah, and that's always, you know, a thing that, you know, in days you're even more, really. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't want to be sort of in there for that, you know, but it's part of it. And so I think I'd like to see both of them, and I'd like to see great reactions for both of them. I'd like to see both of them do really, really well wherever they go next.
That's really fair. I think with that, though, I don't think you're going to see either of those things in the selection, because the thing to point out here is there's a league to be won.
No.
And that's the key, you know, that's the strangeness of this game, in that the worst case scenario on Sunday, in all flavours, in all ways, is simply that Liverpool don't win. The absolute hell scenario beyond the worst case one is Liverpool don't win and Manchester City don't win, at which point we'd all feel absolutely dreadful.
Cancel the parade.
Yeah, well, no, it would be in this run where, you know, for me going into Sunday, apart from that one thing, that one Achilles heel, I feel absolutely bulletproof going into Sunday. I mean, that should be the vibe of all of this show. I hope that's coming over, and I hope that the people listening to this feel bulletproof as well. The only bullet that can pierce my armour is that state of affairs that I've just described. Liverpool got to break 90 points, and I reckon internally Liverpool will have a target year in, year out, that we break 90 points. That's what we've got to do now. If we want to stand a chance of winning the league, we've got to do that, but the aim is always to break 90 points. If they do win on Sunday and, you know, the other thing doesn't go as we hope, then it's all absolutely fine. They'll be clapped off, and it'll be, you know, it'll all be absolutely wonderful, and then they've got a job to go and do in Paris. It would be horrible to see the armour be pierced in any way, shape or form. I think that as a club, and as genuinely as a fan base who sometimes get a bit of criticism for feeling and sounding entitled or feeling nervy, the way the collective responded to a perfectly reasonable home draw to Tottenham, and the way they were clapped off that day, I think it's been absolutely magnificent. I genuinely do. I think there's been, yeah, I think it's partially because we obviously won it in 2019, 2020. You know, I think it might have been a slightly different vibe if that hadn't been the case. But I thought, I thought at the time, and I still do think that it's been hugely important that everyone went, no, go on, lads, yous are fine, yous are great, actually, you're not fine, you're brilliant.
Yous have done everything you possibly could. I think that's the important thing about winning at the weekend, is that at the pre-aid we get to clap, no matter what happens in the European Cup final, we get to clap them and say you did absolutely everything you possibly could.
And and doing it at the weekend, and then that sets the European Cup final for that as well, and that's spot on from Craig. And you know, and the league picture then is exactly the same. You know, what you've done has been absolutely spot on, and we will, you know, we'll do reviews on the Anfield Wrap, and we'll have a bit of a chat about results at Leicester and results against Brighton and all of that, because it's valid. It's valid to bring it up, but it's valid to bring it up in 2 weeks. Today, I don't think it is particularly valid to bring it up. I think it's driving yourselves mad. And if anyone who's listening to this is in the position where they're driving themselves mad, just stop. Just choose not to do it anymore. But they've got to win on Sunday as part of that. They've really got to, and I think they will, and I think they'll win well. And so then you look back into midfield, and I think he won't rush Fabinho back. I think he's the one, if you know, and it does feel as though Fabinho's thing was a bit more significant and it did look like a hamstring. So I think it will be Henderson at six, and I think it will be Thiago and Keita. And I think he'll go that way around and then introduce Fabinho if he's got 20 minutes in him and they want to look at it. I think Keita starts. I'd be amazed if he doesn't. I don't really hope he does, not least because I think he's exactly the sort of football the Wolves can't be bothered with. And then from there, I think Thiago plays, Henderson plays. And then I think if Virgil's fit, Virgil starts. And then it'll be the first choice back four. I'm still looking at, I think it's still touch and go which centre-half plays next to Virgil in the final. I don't think he necessarily knows yet. You know, I think he might be, that might be the position that's most up for grabs, I think, could be that one. Although I also have a sneaking fancy that Henderson might not start the final if everyone's fully fit. But we'll, you know, we'll sort of see that as we go, which way that goes. But that's what I think.
I sort of wonder, Craig, whether he ends up on sort of two of the three of the lads who are doubtful for this one. So two of, you know, Fabinho, Virgil van Dijk and Mo Salah. And I wonder whether that's what he settles on there. So, you know, as Neil says, you could, you know, not start Fabinho in this one, you can bring him off the bench, you could not start Salah, bring him off the bench. In my head, if he was to do just two of the three, the two more likely would be Fabinho and Van Dijk. I don't know how you feel about that.
I would have gone Salah and Van Dijk. I was at Villa and I was really, really worried when everyone went down, as we all would have been. And there was early talk that he was potentially going to be a race for the Champions League final. And I know now he'll be fit, but he's not sure about Wolves. And I think whenever there's that sort of language and worry at the beginning, that made me more nervous about it all. He's the one, like I keep saying it. He's the one that makes me feel warm and confident, and there's assurance whenever I see him on the team sheet. That's Fabinho, and I wouldn't be risking him at all if the only thing is if we can get 20 out of him. But in terms of the centre backs, that I think that's the one thing I'm still unsure. I changed my mind because I love Kanate. I love everything about him. I love his threat from set pieces. I love how quick and powerful he is at the back. I've loved his performances recently, and I've loved how Jurgen's played him in big games and trusted him at that age, and how he's stepped up. But Joe Matip knows how to win a Champions League final, has played in it, and that's the overriding thing for me. I think the thing about midweek and about them resting so many players and being able to bring so many players in is that they will never be in a better position. As long as those three players who are a bit ropey come back, they'll never be in a better position in terms of the wider squad and everyone being fresh and ready to go if they're going to be called upon. I think he's going to play Kanate in the final.
I do,
really. And so I think he's going to play him on Sunday. I think whoever he plays on Sunday plays in the final.
It feels like a toss of a coin, and probably has done for most of the season, John, doesn't it, between Kanate and Matip at the moment. I think he will go for Matip in both, but you think you've got Kanate for the final?
Yeah, I just think he's picking him in all the big games at the moment. I thought Matip had played the League Cup final, and he doesn't, and he goes for Kanate. And, you know, recently it just feels like that when those big games come, that's who he goes for. You know, that Spurs league game, which felt like a really big one, he goes Kanate, and it just seems to me that's who he's favouring. I think, you know, there's nothing between them. I think they're both excellent. I think, you know, obviously they've got different strengths, and so I felt for a while he was going a bit horses for courses, but now he feels like he's favouring Kanate. That's just the impression that I'm getting.
I think in hindsight, if he had his time over, and I don't think he'd do that much differently this season if he had his time over, but in hindsight, if he had his time over, or certainly since the turn of the year, but even before then, I think he picked Matt up against Tottenham.
Yeah, I agree. Because we get so much of the ball.
So I think he picked Matt up against Tottenham. I don't quite see how, and I mean this is a massive compliment to one of the footballers and not the other one, on the whole, but Luka Modric is not Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. And I just don't think Madrid have quite got that same level of we will absolutely dog this in this way in them as Tottenham had. So I don't think he necessarily learns the lesson, in inverted commas, of it. I think it's slightly more likely he plays Konate, because I think he feels Konate will give him 5 yards higher with the pitch of Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I think that he might feel that's what I'd rather have. That's the trade-off. Matip's better carrying the ball out and he's better passing it through the lines than Konate. But Konate's recovery pace is stronger. So if the idea is that we're worried about getting turned around on that side with the way in which they play, then I think he could conclude, well, all right, but we still need to break them down. And the way we win the game is by, I think, by being much the better side, and that a more liberated Trent Alexander-Arnold helps with that. I think Konate might start this weekend. I agree with Craig. I think whoever starts this weekend, if Virgil starts, I hasten to add, if whoever starts next to Virgil, if Virgil starts, then I think that's the one that will start against Madrid. I think that's accurate. If Virgil doesn't start, obviously they both will, and then all bets are off. He's not going to play both of them, Craig. We're going to go to three at the back.
Drop Virg.
Oh, drop Virg. Yeah, he's not going to do that. All in. I'm really looking forward to Sunday. I think it's going to be great. I think Liverpool are going to be excellent. I think it's going to be a really, really strong performance, and I think that the crowd's going to absolutely love every minute of it. And I think that what happens elsewhere happens elsewhere. It's not our business until 70 minutes, and then hopefully we're done and dusted by then. And if it needs to become our business on 70 minutes, then we can all focus right in on it, is what I would say. Apart from the players, obviously, we still need to make sure they don't do anything daft. We can all focus right in,
because Sunday will feel like a bonus, and that's what being in the European Cup final gives you, and it's what winning the FA Cup final last weekend gives you. Is that similar to 18-19? It was going into the stadium and that you get that hope, but it's not expectation, because you feel like Man City are just going to do it, and like you get the 1 or 2 minutes in the cup, which is two of the most joyous minutes that I will ever have in my life. That feeling where it just, you know, goes across the cup and everyone's talking about how City have gone 1-0 down. I want more of that, but I want like 60 minutes of it this time instead of just the 1 minute. It prefers the last 60, but I just feel like I'm going to into this game on Sunday just as seeing it as a bonus. If we manage it, it'll be the best day of our lives, and if not, the following Saturday will be the best day of our lives.
Absolutely. We'll round off with predictions. I want two from you, John. So first, I want your score prediction, and then I'm going to ask you whether you think Liverpool win the league or not. Score prediction first.
3-0. I just think they'll do it. I think they will do it. 3-0 and 1-0.
Neil Atkinson.
Absolute sauce.
Score prediction.
Absolute sauce.
And do you think Liverpool will win the league this weekend?
I think Liverpool will beat Wolverhampton Wanderers by 4-0. I think Liverpool are going to be much the better side. Ultimately, I think that the way in which it's all broken down, I do think that Manchester City will just find a way to keep Aston Villa at arm's length and win 2-0. And it won't be a battle of laps, but I think that they've got too many leagues in the bank already. I think the only thing that makes me think otherwise is there's no other trophy, there's nothing else hanging around for them. That's where the pressure comes on for them, the idea of literally no silverware, but they've got all the experience of winning the title. So I think, I'm not as optimistic as John, although I do think Liverpool will do better in their game against Wolves.
Craig, score prediction.
I'm going to have to say the thing that I didn't want to jinx, but I'm going to have to jinx, aren't I?
Manifest it, that's what you got to say it as.
Manifest it, yes. So I think Liverpool are going to win 2-0, and I think it's going to be City 2-2. I think there's something. Everyone's keep talking about Coutinho, and it's none of my business, that. It's the lads up top, Ollie Watkins and maybe Danny Ings, yeah.
Well, of course, everyone who listens to the Team Talk and has listened to the Team Talk throughout this season knows I'm not a shithouse. I'm going to go with Neil's prediction before of Liverpool 5-0, when you said about maybe them putting 5 past Manchester City. And I'm going to say that Aston Villa win 1-0 against Manchester City. I'm going to say that Liverpool win the league on the last day. This is the last
no
Team Talk of the season.
No
kecks and stop stand. Kecks on your head or off.
I lay with your kecks.
Arrested during the trophy.
If any of those lads on the pitch have their kecks on, they're all fridges. They're definitely shithouses. Well, they're not shithouses, though. This has been the last Team Talk of the season. What a season it's been. One last time to celebrate these lads, and what a fucking time it'll be up the Reds.